Okay, we're going to start here on the bottom of Ted Vav Amabed by the two dots, just to go over the last piece that we did yesterday, which is the issue of clay zukuchit. That was one of the gzeirot that we saw. And the Gemara wants to know, my time a gazur behu rabban and tuma. Why did clay zukuchit, which mina Torah, are completely teorim, why did they require gzeirah to make them tmeim? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan Amarish Lachesh ho v'tchilat briyatan min achol. Since they are created originally from sand, Shavinu Rabbanan kikli charis. The Rabbanan made them like earthenware utensils. Since they are both formed from materials of the ground, we don't want people becoming confused between clay zukuchit and clay charis, saying, well, if glass utensils are teorim, then clay charis should also be teorim. It must be that things that are derivatives of sand, the ground, the earth, the clay, those are teorim. And they'll come to the wrong conclusion. So therefore they said, clay zukuchit should also be tmeim. If that's the case, you shouldn't be able to even tahir them in the mikveh, because we know kli cheres. The only way to be mitahir kli cheres is shviratam hi teharatan. You have to break them in order for them to be tehorim. So why by glass do you not have to break it in order to be tahor? Why don't we have the same requirements as kli cheres? How do I know that you can take glass to the mikveh? Because Alamatnan, we have a Mishnah. Ve'ilu chotzitzim bikelim. These are the items that create a chatzitza in kelim. A chatzitza is something that blocks the item from coming into contact with the waters of the mikveh. In order to become tahor, one has to come into contact with the waters of the mikveh. If there's anything that divides between either the individual, the utensil, and the waters of the mikveh, the item is not tahor if it's something that you're makpid alav, something that you care about. If it's something that's irrelevant to you, then it would not necessarily be a chatzitza. Now with glass is very slippery. It's hard to stick things to glass. And because of that, most items will not be considered a chatzitza by glass because they'll slide off by themselves. They'll come off by themselves. People are not makpid on it because you really don't have to do anything for it to come off. But it'll come off by itself. The exception that is, ve'elu chotzitzim b'kelim azefet ve'amor b'klei zuchuchit. That is pitch and murgam by glass utensils. Those are chotzeitz because they are very sticky. They bind tightly to the glass, and therefore they are considered to be chatzitza. Now, if you're talking about chatzitza by klei zukuchit, that means you're talking about mikveh klei zukuchit. By klei cheres, chatzitza is irrelevant because you never take it to the mikveh. So the fact that the Mishnah is discussing chatzitza in the context of klei zukuchit thinks that they think that the klei zukuchit are teorin through being put into the mikveh. Where it says, okay, mayaskinan, what's the case here? Case here is where there's a hole in the glass utensil, and he plugs the hole with lead, fills that hole with the lead. Rabbi Meir he, according to the sheet of Rabbi Meir, damar kol alecha chara mamid. What determines the nature of the kli is the item that makes it functional. So here, the glass kli had a hole in it, so it wasn't functional until you plugged the hole. Once you plugged the hole, then it became functional. So what's making this kli into what it is? What is the mamid of the kli? The lead. So Rabbi Meir says that makes it into a kli matechet. The Tanya, klei zuchukit she nikvu, v'heitif l'tochan avar, klei zuchukit that get a hole in them, and then you plug the hole with lead. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Meir mitamei v'chachamim mitaharim. Rabbi Meir says it's tamei because it has a din of kli matechet. It's a din of klei matechet. Klei matechet are mekabel tuma, and it's a full-fledged utensil that is classified like metallic utensils. So mimar mitarim, not that they're metahir or the gamre, not that they say that it's tahor the gamre. They say that it's tahor from being a klei matechet, but then it's governed by the gzeira that we have here, the klei zukuchit of mekabel tuma. Can't be that it's not a klei matechet, not a klei zukuchit. It's got to be one of the two. So Rabbi Meir thinks it's a klei matechet, and the chachamim think that it's a klei zukuchit. It's tamei, but whether it's tamei deoraita or tamei derabanan, and whether you need a beit kibul, there are other things that will make a difference whether it's klei matechet or klei zukuchit. Elamiato. If that's the case, so we've solved our problem now that why is it that it can get into the mikveh? That's the case of Rabbi Meir where he classified it as klei matechet. But ein ochanami, we're going to say now, the glass is like klei cheres. And if glass is like klei cheres, and it doesn't go to the mikveh, you have to break it in order to retire it. But there are other unique properties to klei cheres, which is, el miata lo litame mi gaban. Klei cheres are not to be mikabel tuma from their outside. There are other items that are unique about a klei cheres. It's also mikabel tuma mi aviro. in its airspace on the inside. So those are unique properties of earthenware utensils, is that they have tuma only internally. Internally, it's whether it touches the clay or whether it's in the airspace of the clay. And they also do not accept tuma from their outside. Olam HaTnan, we have a Mishnah. Klei cheres, uklei neter. So when we're talking about earthenware utensils, Rashi says, klei neter min adama lebana. It's some sort of white clay or white earth that is used to make the clay. Tumatan shaveh. The tuma is equal or on the same plane, which is mitamim u mitamin. That means that they accept tuma and they convey tuma. Mi'avirihen. That's internally. In the internal airspace, they can accept tuma and they can pass on tuma. But umitamin me'achoreim ve'ein mitamim migabehen. They do accept tuma from their back and they don't accept tuma from their back. So here you have to differentiate what is achor and gab. So Rashi claims that, think about a goblet, like a kiddush cup. An example, a kiddush cup on a stem. You have a kiddush cup on a stem. You have the clay kibul, which is the place where you put the wine. At the bottom of the stem, there's the base of the cup. If you turn that over upside down, that base has a beit kibul in it. That base over here is what Rashi calls achorehim. That's the achor of the cup. Migabehen is the outside of the cup where you hold the wine, the outside area of that cup. So that's what Rashi says. When the Mishnah says that they are mitamim me'achorehem, that's that base. Because that base underneath, that's where they do accept tuma. Ve mitamim migabehem means the outer side of the clay kibul where you put the wine. Ushviratan mitaharatan. And like we said before, kli cheres, the way to be mitaharet is to break it. Klei neter u klei cheres hu de tumatan shaveh. The Mishnah is particular about what's in this category. It says klei cheres, klei neter, avol mida achrine, lo. But anything else is not in this category. Well, if klei zuchukrit have the same din as klei cheres, there should have been a third item that is mentioned in the Mishnah. Why is klei zuchukrit absent in this Mishnah? Amrei. Kevan dechi nishtabru yeshlehem takana shavinu kiklei metechot. The chachamim were actually straddling the fence here. They made it into a klei zuchukrit, into a klei cheres, because of where it derives from. On the other hand, they didn't make it completely like a klei cheres because it has a property that is not similar to klei cheres. When you break earthenware utensils, they are not functional and they cannot be put back together again. That's it. That's the end of their utility. On the other hand, when it comes to glass, if you break glass, you can melt the glass again and start from scratch. You can put it back together. That is similar to klei matechot, metallic kelim. Metallic kelim, if you break or they break, you can put them back together again. Now over here, Tosfot points out that the girsens, the girsens that we have is, lo amrei kevan dechi nishtabru yesh lahem takana. Tosfot points out that there was a girsa, ella. There was a gears that had the word Ella in it, and Tosfot says, Lo garsina and Ella. Ella means we're rejecting what we said before, and now we're making a new conclusion. If you say that, that means that the Gemara is leaving Klei Cheres and saying that Klei Zuchukrit is now Klei Matechet. And that's what Tosfot says is not correct. The Gemara here is not rejecting that it's a Klei Cheres. The Gemara is explaining is that it's a Klei Cheres plus. Right, exactly. It's straddling the two sides of the fence, which is that it is like a klei cheres, but it also like a klei matechet. So, el mi'ata, yachzuru l'tumatan yishana kikli matechot. That's the case. They should go back to their original tuma, like metallic kelim, which is interesting. There's a special din derabanan, that by metallic kelim, if you break the metallic kelim, they lose their tumah. They are tahor, like any other keli. If you destroy it, it's tahor. But with the other kelim, if you reconstitute the kli or you put it back together, they become a kli prospectively. From that point forward, they are a kli. But anything that happened before is meaningless to this kli. On the other hand, by klei metechet, and we'll get to this in the second half of the daf, when you reconstitute the kli, it retains its original tumah. Not prospectively, but retroactively, it accepts the tumah that it had before, and it's as if it was never tahor. Why? We'll discuss that in a couple of minutes. But that is a unique property of metallic kelim. If that's the case, and we're saying now that glass is like metal or metallic kelim, then it should also have that property. Then when you break it and reconstitute it, it's not prospectively possible to get tumah, but it should even retroactively have tumah. That's not. Klei matechot, when it comes to metallic kleilim, shutehem umikablehem tmeim. Number one unique property of metallic kleilim is both if it is a clay kibul, which is that it's a receptacle, it's mikabel tumah, and shutehem, if it's flat, it's mikabel tumah. It does not have to have a clay kibul, it does not have to have a receptacle in order to accept tumah. Other kelim only accept tumah through when they have a clay kibul and they have a receptacle, based on the Mar's limud from the Pasuk by Klei Midyan, that compares eitz or and everything to a sack. Sack has a receptacle in it, that's how it's utilized. And therefore all these other kelim are domim l'sak, and because they're domim l'sak, they require a beit kibul. Metal does not have that. Because over there, the Pasuk says, Ach Klei Zahav, puts them in their own category, and they are Tzmeim, whether they have a receptacle or not. If Nishbiru, Taru. If they are broken, then they are Tor. Chazar, Vasam, and Kelim. If he then goes back and use that metal to rebuild the Kli, Chazru, Litumatan, Yeshana. They go back to the original Tumah. Vilu Gabe Klei Zuchuchit. Whereas the Mishnah and Kelim that just described the metallic Kelim is an equivalent Mishnah for glass utensils. And over there it says, Tan, Kleitz, Kleor, Kleetzem, and Klei Zuchuchit. They're all in the same category. Wood, leather, bones, and glass. Shutehem, Tehorim. Number one is that when they're flat, they are not mikabel tumah because they require a receptacle of beit kibul. O mikablehem tmeim. If they have a receptacle, then they become tmei. Nishbiru taru. If you break them, they are tor. Hazar vasameh and kelim. If you reconstitute them, if you put them back together, or you use the materials to make a clay, mikablehem tumah mikan ulahaba. They accept tumah prospectively, not retroactively. Kan ulahaba in mafrei lo. Prospectively yes, retroactively no. That differentiates or distinguishes clay zuchuchit from clay matechet. So over here, you wanted to be straddling the fence and have it be both a clay cheres and a clay matechet. Over here, there's a property of clay matechet that it does not have. Tamar says tumat clay zuchuchit derabanan. Let's be sure that the fact that glass utensils accept tumah is only a din derabanan. Tumah yishana derabanan. And the fact that when you reconstitute a kli, there's tumah, that's also a din derabanan. Mina Torah, when you break the kli, the tumah is gone, never comes back again. When you put it back together, or you fix this kli, and now it accepts tumah retroactively, that's all a din derabanan. Obvious that what we have here is two dinim derabanan, which is bitumah d'oraita. When we're talking about tumah, that's mina Torah, achitu bar rabbanan tumah. The rabbanan instituted in clay zuchuchit that it has the same properties as a clay matechet. But tumah d'rabbanan, when it comes to things that are tumah d'rabbanan, lo achitu la rabbanan tumah. So then the rabbanan did not institute tumah here. What the rabbanan said is that clay zuchuchit are both clay cheres and clay matechet. But when it comes to clay matechet, they only have the tumah that is Torah level tumah of Klei Matechet. They don't want to go so far as to say that even Dinei Derabanan that applied to Klei Matechet also applied to Klei Zuchuchit. It would be a Gzera L'Gzera, although you could just say it's not a Gzera, which is that it just has tumah like Klei Matechet, and it's not a Gzera L'Gzera, but they wanted to only make Klei Zuchuchit like the metallic Kelim Del Raito. So Gemara asks the next obvious question, which is, the Mishnah also had another distinction. The Mishnayot said that Klei Matech, metallic Kelim, accept Tumah even when they're flat. Klei Zuchuchit do not accept Tumah when they are flat. Now the Gemara has to ask, what about that? That's the Gemara says, here, Pshutehem, Yalditameh. Why doesn't a Klei Zuchuchit, the glass utensil that is flat, that doesn't have a receptacle in it, why doesn't it accept Tumah? Just like Klei Matechet. That's a din d'oraita. Top shute Klei Matechet d'oraita ninu. That is mina Torah, which we mentioned before. To have a receptacle to become Tameh is true by eitz or sak, by those kelim. Not true by Matechet. And if you're comparing glass to Matechet, then it should be also that it's mekabel Tumah when it's flat. Where it says, Abdi behu rabbanan hekera. Rabbanan made a heker here. They wanted to make sure that people understood that the Tumah of Klei Zuchuchit is only Midrabanan. So they accepted something from the Tumah. They said if it's a flat utensil, it won't have Tumah. To show you the difference between it and Klei Matechet. Klei Matechet is a Din D'Oraita. Glass? That's only a Din D'Rabanan. How do you know that? Because we'll make something unique or distinct about glass, which is that even when it's flat, it's not to make Mekabel Tumah. So now the Gemara says, Rav Ashi Amar. Now Rav Ashi says, the Olam L'Kli Cheres Damu. Rav Ashi goes back to the original premise, which is that they are like Kli Cheres, they are like earthenware utensils. So now he has the problem that we had originally. It is Mekabel Tuma Migaba. We know that by the Kli Cheres, it's only Mekabel Tuma internally, Me'avirian. So what about that distinction that he has to answer? So V'tekakashalach lo ditamu migaban hovnire tochoke baro. His glass is unique. Glass is transparent. Earthenware vessels, we distinguish between the inside and the outside because they're really distinct locations and you can't see what's on the inside you can't see on the outside, what's on the outside you can't see on the inside. Glass, on the other hand, even though they're distinct locations inside and outside, because it's transparent, that which is on the inside is like it's on the outside. What's on the outside is like it's on the inside. And you always see that. You pick up a glass, it has some dirt on it. You can't tell sometimes it's on the inside or the outside. Oh, you see something that's dirty on the glass. So he's saying, not because...
Their glasses those days were clear?
No, they don't have to be clear. They're probably colored. I think most of their glass was colored. It's not saying that, oh, you have to be able to see through it. It's just that because they are somewhat transparent, then he said we don't take that distinction. So, as opposed to what we said before, which was the original institution of the Tumah and Klei Zuchukit was because they were similar to Klei Cheres, but the properties of Klei Zuchukit were like that of Klei Matechot, because when you break them, you can reconstitute them. Over here, Rav Ashi is saying the entirety is based on Klei Cheres. It's Klei Cheres through and through, because both, again, the origins of the Gezerah are in Klei Cheres, as well as its properties. The exceptional property, which is the fact that it's Mekabel Tumah Migaba, even though it's like a Kli Cheres, that's because of this unique property of glass, which is that it's transparent from the inside to the outside, therefore they did not differentiate Mitocho Migabo. Rav Ashi does say, and that's what Tosafot points out over here, that if they are new Kli Zuchukit, what happens if you get a new glass utensil? Well, it'll make a difference what you think it is. If you think it's earthenware utensils do not have to go to the mikveh before you use them. Let's say earthenware utensils in their day are the equivalent of what we call plastic today, temporary kelim. They use them, they threw them. They were more like your disposable type of kelim. There, kli cheres do not require mikveh before you utilize them. Klei matechot, on the other hand, do require mikveh before you use them. So what would have come out to be a nafka mina here is if you think that the origins of the gzeirah klei cheres, but it has properties of klei matechot, then you would require it to go to the mikveh before you used it. On the other hand, Rav Ashi, who says that klei cheres through and through, he says not only is the origins of the gzeirah klei cheres, but also the halachot of klei cheres shouldn't have to take it to the mikveh beforehand. Tosafot points out that Rav Ashi does think you have to take it to the mikveh. So he says, Rav Ashi can't reject completely Klei Matechot. He still has the logic in his mind. When they are broken, you can reconstitute them. They still have some properties of Klei Matechot, which is that they do require mikveh up front. So Rav Ashi concedes that point, that they're like Klei Matechot, at least for that point, which is that they do require mikveh up front. Shimon ben Shetach, Tikein Ktuba Lisha, V'gazar Tuma, Aklei Matechot. So now we have Shimon ben Shetach, we're going through the Braita that we had quoted, which had Shammai Behillel in it about Yadayim. We're bringing down the other items in that Braita, and we're going through them one by one. So we dealt with Yadayim, Yosef ben Yochanan, and Yosef ben Yezer, about Eretz Ha'amim and Tumat Klei Zuchukit. And now we're up to Shimon ben Shetach, which is Tuba and Klei Matechot. Gemara again does not deal with Ketubah. I mentioned what the takana of Shimon ben Shetach was with regards to Ketubah, which is that he encumbered the entire property of the man to the woman for her Ketubah in order to prevent the man from having to take the loss up front, to set aside the monies to pay the Ketubah, where it made it easy for him to divorce the woman because he had taken the loss already. When he made it that everything was encumbered and the loss was not realized up front, then there was no reserve for the Ketubah. That means when he divorced her, he'd have to take the loss on the spot, and he would think twice before divorcing his wife. That was the institution of Shimon ben Shetach. Then we have Gezar Tuma Aklei Matechot. He was Gozer Tuma Aklei Matechot. Aklei Matechot, Toraita Ninu. What do you mean that he was Gozer on Aklei Matechot? Aklei Matechot Ab Tuma Min HaTorah. Tichtiv Achet Azav Et HaKesef. Again, that's in the Klei Midyan, and we know that they are accepting Tuma and how you are Metaher them. Lo Nitzrucha, Hala Tuma Yishana. This is what we just discussed, which is, it has to do with this retroactive Tuma. the tuma that when you reconstitute the kli, it has the original tuma comes back to it. There was this case with Tzion HaMalka. I don't know if this is the equivalent of Shom Tzion HaMalka. Shasta Mishte Livna. She made a party, some sort of celebration for her son. Mishte usually involves marriage or a wedding, but could be here that it was for some sort of milestone in his life. V'nitmu'u kol kli leha. And all the kelim became tmeim. V'shavartan v'natatan letzoreif. What they ended up doing was they broke all of them, gave them to the smelter or to the blacksmith. V'ritchan. And he put them back together. Actually, interesting, when he says, translates the word ritchan, he says, sholdi belaz, which is soldering, soldering. They were soldered back together. Vasamhen kelim chadashim. They're all new. And she went ahead and had the party. So, amru chachamim yakzeru lutumatana yeshana. They should go back to the original state of tumah. That's what Shimon Shetach instituted here. My time up. Mishum geder mechatat naguba. To protect the paraduma. So Rashi says, because if we didn't do this, nishtakach torat mechatat, paraduma would go by the wayside. Because if you have a choice, you have metallic kelim, you can wait 7 days to get them back and be tahor and go through the whole process of paraduma, or you can break them and re-solder them and put them back together and be done in a day, half a day.
Unusable.
Correct. You have to ruin their utility and then just make them usable again. A hole the size of a rimon, it says. The size of a rimon. A rimon's pretty big. But anyway, you could ruin them from their utility and then re-solder them and it'd be back together in less than a day. So, which would you choose? Nobody's gonna go with the parat chatat anymore. They're all gonna use this methodology for going. So Chazal were afraid that the whole institution of chatat, paraduma, would go by the wayside.
Still have people
right, but with kelim at least. Yeah, by kelim it's more frequent and more likely to be forgotten. So Rashi says, "Anich l'man d'amar lo l'chol atumot amru." They didn't say this about all tumot elu l'tumat amet bilvad. So then, if the institution of tumat yishana is only by tumat amet, then it makes a lot of sense here, because the whole gedder is for paraduma, which is only relevant by tumat amet. So therefore, if the gezeira of tumat yishana is by mate, then this all works well. Amru Shapir. Elaman d'amar l'chol tumot amru. Whoever says that it applies to any tumah, then ma'ikal meimar. Then gedr mechatat is not relevant. Because even a zav and a zava, all types of tumah that affect the kelim, they're gonna also come back. And what does that have to do with parat chatat? Marbaye gezeira shema lo yikavena b'gedei ta'arato. So this comes back. Maybe we won't make a hole big enough to make it tahor. So exactly the problem that we're discussing here is how big is the hole to ruin its utility? And now you're dealing with something that's quasi-subjective. Because I like to have it to be objective and objective standard. And so if you don't reach that objective standard, then we're not going to allow it to become tahor. Rava amar gzeira shem yomru tvila bat yuma ulala. Another possibility, which is that people are going to come to say that you don't need Harav Shemesh. You don't need the sun to set. Because what's going to happen here? You're going to put a hole in the keli, you're going to re-solder it, and it's going to be tahor that day. People are going to think that you took it to the mikveh to make it tahor. And they're going to say, wow, he's using it before the sun set on that day. Oh, you don't need the sun to set in order for it to be tahor? The answer is you do, but they use a different methodology. But people won't know that you use the alternative methodology. You just know that it was tamei, and now you're tahor, and you're using it before sunset. My benayu, what's the nafkamina between a bayin and rova's gzeiro? The retzfinu miretzif. Rashi brings herikan, Vishavran kulan. Kigon, makolet ritzupa. Kolet ritzupa is when you smush a louse. So here's the equivalent of flatten it. Flatten out the keli. So Rashi says, well then, if you flatten out, shemala yikaven aleka. The size of the hole doesn't matter anymore. You ruined its utility without ever putting a hole in it, because you flattened it out. So the gzeira of shema yikaveno is not a problem, lo yikaveno. Shema yomru ika, the fact that it'll become tahor on that day, that there is. Vika damre, and Rashi brings another lashon that's just the opposite, and he favors it. He says the other lashon is shema lo yikaveno ika. Still, the question of a hole is still there. Shema yomru leka hada minkar asiya shenitchadesh kulo. Over there, when you put a hole in it, and then you solder it, there's a small thing that was changed. It's not clear to people what you did in order to make it tahor. It may patch a lot of holes already. But when it comes to flattening the kli, and then you have to reconstitute the whole kli, there it's clear that the whole thing looks new. So in that case, you won't worry about tefilat bat yoma, but shema yikaveno, you will worry about it. Is he doing enough to ruin the utility of the kli, even when he flattens it out? So we're worried that people are not going to take the necessary steps, because the more you do to make it tahor, the more work it is to fix it afterwards. So people are going to be reluctant to go the full distance to make it tahor. Rashi says, "V'zeniri be'enai." He thinks that's the right explanation here of the nafkamina between the two opinions. All right. Now the Gemara comes back, leaves this talk, and says, "V'idach mahi." Idach mahi goes back to our original point of the Gemara, which is what are the 18 halachot that were nigzar bo bayom? We've been searching for them. We had 9 in the Mishnah, and now we want to proceed and find out what the rest of them are. 9 in the Mishnah that we brought from Zavin. That we listed, that we've just been investigating. Yadayim, Ochel, Ochel Rishon, Ochel, Ochel Sheni. All of those were mentioned in the Mishnah. Now the Gemara says, I need the rest of the list. What's the rest of the list? And the Gemara says, Titan. Haminiyah kelim tachar atzinor, lekabel mehen megishamim. If you're talking about a mikveh, person puts utensils under the pipe to capture the water, the rainwater. The pipe that we're talking about here, which makes a difference, is if you have a pipe that's made, and then you affix it to the ground, waters for the mikveh that go through that are problematic. They're considered to be mei shulvim, they're considered to be drawn water, and cannot be used for the mikveh. On the other hand, if you fasten a log into the ground, and after the fact you carve up the pipeline, that's considered to be mechuber the karka, and that pipe will not ruin the mei shamim. Rainwater that falls in that and rolls off of that into the mikveh will be fine. So because it's considered mechuber the karka, and it's not a problem. So here we're talking about such a pipe. A pipe that was first affixed, then carved out. So it's itself is not problematic for the Meg Shamim. Had the water flown from that pipe into the mikveh, you would have been fine. What this individual did was stuck a utensil under the pipe to capture the water. And then either took those utensils, poured it into the mikveh, or they overflowed and then went into the mikveh. Echad kelim gdolim, ve'echad kelim ktanim. Whether they are big kelim or small kelim. Vafilu klei abanim, kelim made out of stone. Klei adama are kelim that are made out of the earth, in distinction to klei cheres and klei neter, where you use water and the material and you put them together, you knead them, and then you heat them. Over here, you simply use the earth and then you dry it out. It's just dried out as earth itself. Klei gilalim. Over here, Rashi says something amazing. He says klei gilalim. Rashi says shayish, marble. So one of the only places in Shas, I think that Rashi says it, everywhere else in Shas, Rashi says, Tzviyei Bakar, is that it's dung, which is what Klei Galalim should be, and so that's probably the most likely interpretation. Now, all of these examples, the Mishnah is bringing examples of Kelim that are otherwise Tehorim. These are Kelim, are not Mekabel Tuma. Stone Kelim, this Kelim made out of stone, Kelim made out of the earth, Kelim that are Gedolim, super big, that you can't move them when they're filled. None of these kelim are accepting tuma. Klei galalim is the same thing, or even if they're klei shayish, all of these items do not mikabel tuma. Nevertheless, poslim et mikveh. They are posel the mikveh because they are classified as kelim with regards to mei mikveh, even though they don't have a status of kelim with regards to tuma and tahara. Echad amaniach ve'echad ashocheach divrei Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says it doesn't matter if you put the utensil there intentionally or you left it there by accident; it ruins the mikveh. Dilel mitarim bishocheach. Dilel says, if you forgot it there, we're not going to hold them accountable. Amar Rabbi Meir, nimnu virabu Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. That day they came to a count, they wanted to make a decision. Turns out that Beit Shammai exceeded Beit Hillel, and therefore the Gzeira went with Beit Shammai. The Gemara is suggesting is that this Gzeira is both ayom. On that same day, in the Aliyah of Chananinam, umodim Beit Shammai bishocheach bichatzer, shu tahor. That Beit Shammai agrees, if you leave it out in the chatzer, that is tahor, because that is a likely place to leave your kelim. People store the utensils out in their courtyard. We're going to have more of a qualification right now in the Gemara, which is, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Adayim Machloket Bimkoma Umedet. Yossi says this is not one of the items where the decision went with Beit Shammai. Machloket still exists between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And our principles are, when you have a Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, Halacha ke Beit Hillel. So according to Rabbi Yossi, the halacha was like Beit Hillel, not like Beit Shammai on that day. Amar Misharshia, Beirav Amrei, Kol Modim Ksheinicham Beshat Kishuranim. Everybody agrees, if they took them out, when the clouds were gathering, it looked like that it was going to rain, that they are Tmeim. Beshat Pizurav, if he puts them out there when the clouds are dispersing, Tibir Yakol Teorim. Because there it's clear what his intent is. He puts it out there when the clouds are gathering, he's putting it out there to catch the rainwater. It's clear that he wants that to happen. Then he puts it out there when there are either no clouds. And when they say here the clouds are dispersing, it means that there's no sight of rain, nothing in sight of rain. Then you are teorin. Over there, there's no question, because he doesn't have any intent for rain. He's just putting them outside. That's why he's putting them there. So the usage of the words tmeim and teorim are here are somewhat difficult. Because really, in our case, the issue is ksherim and psulim. Are they kasher for mikveh, or are they pasul for mikveh? The usage of the terminology tmeim and teorim is somewhat suspect. I think, and it's possible that the Braita here, or what they're speaking about, is whether they are makshir, something to be mekabel tuma or not. Is this water considered to be ki yutan dumiyat ki yitain? That he wants the water. If he wants the water, then it is makshir the kabel tuma. If he doesn't want the water, it's not makshir the kabel tuma. So it might be that the two are correlated. If you want the water to be in there, it's also posel the mikveh, but it's also makshir the kabel tuma. Lo nechlegu, they only argued, ela, sheinicham, b'shakishur avim, when the clouds were gathering, it looked like it was going to rain, the forecaster said it was going to rain, he takes the kelim matzai, but then, b'nit pazru, as it be, all the clouds disappeared, dispersed, and there was no rain. But then, b'chazru b'nit kashru, in the end it does rain, but not at the time that he thought. So mar savar b'teilo machshavato. Beit Hillel says, his original intent is gone. His original intent was gone because he was originally, he had intent, but then he became a shocheach afterwards, because he just left them there. Marzavar, lo b'teilo machshavato. His original intent is not nullified, because he intended originally to get the rain, and if it only rains later, right, the fact that he didn't think about this rain doesn't change the fact that it counts. So over here, the question is, does the kavanah for the first rain work, or to apply to the second rain? Beit Shammai says yes, Beit Hillel says no. So now we have another one of the 18. But the Gemara says, Ud Rabbi Yossi damar, machloket adayin bimkoma omedet. Rabbi Yossi who says that, Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel argue here, batzri, lo. He has one less than 18 now, because we're counting this as one of the 18. What does Rabbi Yossi replace here? He says, Amram Nachum Yitzchak, af benot kutim nidot marisatan bo bayom gazru. Also, the din of Benot Kutim, daughters of the Kutim that are Nidot, Mari Satan. They have a classification of being a Nida from birth. That happened on that day.
Everyone, or?
Very good question. Here it sounds like it's only according to Rabbi Yossi. But the Gzira does apply to everybody. Tosafot deals with it a lot over here. Says Rabbi Yossi the Shitato actually does not even have this Gzira. So he says the Gzira has to apply even according to Rabbi Yossi's Shita, Machloket, whether Kutim are Geri Arayot or Geri Emet. And according to the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, who says that they're Geri Arayot, then the whole Gzira here doesn't make sense. Because they're not even really Jewish. They're not Jewish. The whole Gzira was instituted because of the problem that they have with the Dinei Nida. They do not subscribe to our Dinim of Dinei, or the Torah Shebaal Peh of Dinei Nida. And therefore they made mistakes, and they said a woman was Tehorah, even though she was really Tmeyah. And that's the institution. We learned that in the Gemara Nida. That was what the whole institution's about. That only applies if you think they are Geri Emet. If they're Geri Arayot, then they're not Jewish. So then the whole institution of Zera doesn't make sense. So over here, how could it be? So what Tosafot says is that it must be that everybody subscribes to this Gzera. Even though they think that they are Gerayot, but for a different reason. Which is that, Habi Mishum Timua. For getting mixed up. Mixing with them and getting Tameh from them. That it was a general institution of Tuma with regards to the Kutim, independent of this reason that is specified in the Mishnah in Nida. He says that this institution applied to everybody. So once you do that, then you're back to square one. Does it apply to everybody? And if you look in the counts, the 18 items, for instance, some of the Rishonim Achronim bring it, some don't bring it. So, if you don't count it, then you have to come up with the additional items. And that's part of the question of the 18 items. Gemara doesn't give you all of the numbers. You have to try to figure out what's missing. And that sometimes we're going to come up to at the end of the Gemara that there's another Gzera. Gzera involves three items. Are those considered to be three separate Gzerot? Or is it one big Gzera? So that also make a difference how you count the other items. Did you count the two in the Mishnah before, lo yikre lo oraner, and lo yafle lo oraner? If you count those two, then you only need 16 more. According to the Rambam, we don't count those two, then he needs 18 more. So you can see that the count will depend on what you include, what you don't include, so the same thing over here. Stop over here.